For so very long, it's been...
Go on, George. Tell how it's gonna be.
But in the end, the commish only said...
We figured it 17 different ways. And every time we figured it, it was no good. Because no matter how we figured it...
But no matter how you figure it out, I still don't get as much as anybody else.
Somebody don't like the way we figured it. So now, there's only one way to figure it. And that is every man for himself.
When Black Friday comes,
this is the end.
It's the end of the world.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Or is it now? As a new year hits, through it all, Beaver Nation moves ahead with resiliency and hope.
Sun's up. Mm-hmm. Looks okay. The world survives into another day.
And the way forward goes through, as it must, The Joe Beaver Show with John Warren and Mike Parker.
A number of times I heard these guys' voices over and over and over. Still can't find it.
Nah, can't find it? We can help.
This here's 1240.
1240?
It's always been 1240.
My client says it's 1240.
Yeah, plus 93.7 FM and streaming live at KEJOAM.com and on the KEJO app. It's the Joe Beaver Show.
Good afternoon, everybody. Or good morning, actually. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the program. I'm John Warren, back in the saddle again. Thanks to TJ for filling in and taking over solo yesterday. I was at a funeral, so I wasn't even listening in. And it was, it was solemn and somewhat emotional. It was my aunt. I feel bad for my dad because he's the last person standing out of a 6-kid family.
Wow.
And he's lost 3 siblings in the last 14 months. So that part of it was tough. The good part of it was seeing a lot of family, tons of family, including cousins' kids that I had never met before, getting out of touch with some older cousins, and then they were all there. And so that's what I was doing. And so here we are together on a Wednesday. We'll be here tomorrow and Friday. We're going to do baseball tomorrow?
Tomorrow it'll be at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, okay. So after the show. And today, speaking of after the show, Mike Parker will be on at 2 o'clock with the pregame show for the 2:30 showdown with UCLA. You know, no matter what you think, no matter how jaded one can get about this year's team, the number of win totals, some great wins, but some really bad losses. You look at this one and you think, you know, this, if there was going to be one, they could beat UCLA. They could play like they did against Utah, you know, a week and a half ago and win that game, or like they did against Arizona. It doesn't happen often enough, and that's the problem. Too much of it, what I see, is they win only when they hit their shots, which would make sense. Oh, duh. Except, TJ, a lot of times if you have certain sets and things that you can run through and some backdoor opportunities, whatever it might be, you can create some offense even if you're not hitting your shots by getting closer in shots. Mm. Unfortunately, they just don't. Either, and that's post power. And either you have stuff that runs through that to get closer shots, or you have strong post play, which the Beavers do. I'm not cracking on their post play at all. Tyler Bilodeau, though, is as good from 18 as he is from 5.
Mm-hmm.
And most teams are a little bit bigger and stronger in the post. And that's been the case with the Beavers, is that they're having to score from the outside. And if you're hitting your shots, great. They're in all these games, yeah, winning some of them.
And it's tough when when you don't. And even if the Beavers win today, if you're talking about strong post play, who they'd face on Thursday, if they were to win at the same time, they'd face Oregon. They face Infallidante, who was watched McGill Coliseum. He was pretty dominant, against the Beaver Bigs, and he'll get one last crack at it in the tournament this year. It's a tough road. The Beavers are going to pull off any sort of run in this tournament. You know, they've played close with UCLA, but lost both. Same thing with Oregon. Played close, lost both of them.
Yeah,
not easy. Not easy.
And I'll say this though, not to be cute or anything like that. It's just kind of remember, and the run of 21 started with UCLA at the Pac-12 tournament.
Mm-hmm.
That's as far as it goes. There's no similarities this year. But I will say that, you know, UCLA, Mike was telling me this morning, we were talking about it, he said that one point in a game against Arizona State, they missed like 14 straight shots. So they can be bad. UCLA can really struggle, but then they can come up with some big wins, just like Oregon State did against Arizona and a few others against Utah. A great win, 92 points against Utah. If they can score like that. Do you agree with Wilner? I agree with Wilner, who wrote or tweeted that Jordan Pope, it was a crime that he doesn't get first team all conference.
Especially when they put 15 players on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would think.
You know, he's all freshman last year. This year he's leading in a couple of categories. In fact, he's fifth nationally among sophomores in scoring, and he only makes the all-conference honorable mention. So that's a little bit of a rip-off there. And Oregon gets three players, but Oregon State only Jordan Pope. So let's hope that Pope and Tyler have good games. Dexter Akano is Mike's. I think he said he was going to get Dexter. He hadn't done it yet, but he was going to shoot for Dexter as the program player profile in the pregame and all of that. And let's hope that Mike's gone again tomorrow and doing the same thing at 2:30 against Oregon, because the winner plays Oregon. And this is not the start. Who plays at noon? Who plays? I didn't even get a chance to look at that.
Oh, let's look.
Yeah. Look up, man. You're really fast. TJ is the lookup guy. Pac-12 game first round, 12 noon.
It is.
The women last week's 12 noon game played at 12 noon.
USC
on Thursday.
Washington. Yeah.
USC Washington. Okay. Does Washington State, who wins? Who comes out with the tournament title?
Arizona.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though Washington State got them twice?
Yeah. Yeah. Hard to beat a team three times in any sport.
Yeah, it is. Washington State kind of limped towards the end of the.
Lost to Washington
the regular
last week.
Season.
That's a bad loss.
Yeah.
That's a bad loss.
Was that before or after the coach got fired?
After
Hopkins.
Who's after?
Was it after Hopkins got fired?
And it was at home.
Yeah, it was in Pullman.
It was bad. That's I have a hard time seeing anyone but Arizona coming out.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Anybody.
They're just loaded with talent.
Yeah.
And you know, speaking of that, DeAndre Ayton is everything I thought he was. I know he seems like he doesn't want to play basketball anymore, but every time he does, he gets double doubles. And if he gets really good double doubles, generally, the Blazers are in games. Now, they were playing Boston, the best team in the league, the other night. He got a double, 22 and 15. They weren't going to win that game. They were down big the whole time. But ever since I saw him as a freshman at Arizona, I thought, that guy's amazing.
Yeah.
He has so much talent.
He is one of the biggest players I've seen on a collegiate basketball court. And he looked the most grown up of anyone I've ever seen. Like, you sure he's 18? Yeah. Are you sure about that? I'm not. I wasn't certain.
What was the name of that kid? He got famous for being like 15 years old in the Little League World Series back in the day.
I know who you're talking about. He played for some New York Little League.
Yeah.
I forget about it. Forged his birth certificate to get in there and just throw absolute gas against all these poor, like, 11 and 12-year-olds.
Right.
You know, that's kind of how it was when DeAndre Ayton played in the Pac-12 that year. It was like he was playing against a helpless 11 and 12-year-olds. I think Arizona still ended up winning the conference championship that year and the tournament championship. But I would be kind of shocked if Arizona doesn't roll through as the only top 10 team in the conference, win the tournament, and set themselves up as the Pac-12's probably only chance of making an Elite Eight or Final Four this year, barring some unforeseen circumstances. And, I mean, overall, what's been a really another mediocre year of basketball in the Pac-12. I mean,
yeah.
Just in the final current iteration of it, very on brand in terms of how it's all played out and how many teams are going to get in and how the KenPom ratings have shook out, and really just of all the results. I mean, like 5 through 12 all have losing records in conference, right?
Yeah.
I think it's 5 through 12. That's
it. It's not a good year. It's not a good year.
So unbelievably mediocre.
And it's okay. It's okay because I don't want that to be the reflection on the league as a whole for long periods of time. In other words, just a few years ago, it was the best league there was. Couple of teams in the Final Four, close to it, the Elite Eight, let's say Oregon State, UCLA, some other teams that had a couple of wins. The league gets a bad rap because it could go 5, 6, 7 years of pretty quality stuff, have one bad year, and then everybody just trashes on the Pac-12.
Yeah.
When the league is gone after this year, I'm going to always remember it as getting a bad rap on many, many occasions because of being so far out west. It's an easy dog to kick, and everybody around the country always has. But statistically, and if you look at it, it's like you have no idea what you're talking about. The league is far and away dominates in many sports, volleyball, softball, sometimes basketball, not always. The ACC, of course, is always going to get the assumption that it's of its greatness, and for good reason. So I don't know. And it all, I'm glad you brought that up, because it brings us around to, this is it.
Yeah, this is it.
This is it. And I was thinking about this morning because, you know, last week was the best, probably the best year ever for the women's tournament, with all those teams that have been certainly top 10 teams this year, and even top five, USC, UCLA, Stanford. And then you have Oregon State that made it to the top 10 and then is hovering around there now at number 12. And then you have Utah and Colorado. They were top 10 teams. This was the best year, and continues to be, because of the tournament next week, or in 2 weeks, but no, next week actually. So the best it's ever been. Great tournament. Watch the games. I like the Pac-12 network for what they do. I know it's criticized for not being available and a few other things. All of this, and boom, it's done.
It's done.
Forever.
Yeah. There were like four national title contenders on the floor last week in Vegas for the women's tournament. Four.
Yeah, and that league
better than
disbanding.
Better than anything else any other league was putting out. I know the SEC got a lot of attention last week for their fiasco and their conference title game in South Carolina's undefeated regular season and the fight at the end of the game.
The brawl. And the brother that came out.
Yeah, and the suspicion, like, are they going to suspend everybody for the first round? Which they probably win. I mean, usually the 1-16 matchups in the women's tournament is usually like a 60-70 point affair.
Yeah.
But just fascinating. But regardless, like, the attention wasn't on the Pac-12 last week, even though the Pac-12 was like, yeah, we have probably, in our semifinals, we have four national title contenders on the floor. All four of them out there, USC, UCLA, Stanford, Oregon State, the top four seeds were the cream of the crop. Like, those are teams that could end up hoisting the trophy at the end of the year. And the Beavers certainly showed it against Stanford. But
Danny Almonte.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks to the texter.
What a story. But
DeAndre,
it stinks.
Danny Almonte.
It stinks.
No, you're right. By the way, the West Coast Conference women's tournament was not last week. It was this week. And yesterday, the Portland Pilots, they won the conference. They beat 13th ranked Gonzaga. Now, if someone would have come up to you and said, okay, this team is going to play this other team. Now, the one team beat the other team by 50 13 days ago, beat them by 21 at their place in January, defeated Stanford handily in December, and defeated, has a 30-3 record. Who's going to win? Well, not the team you're talking about. The Pilots beat Gonzaga after those numbers. They beat the Pilots 13 days ago by 50, 90-40. I did look at the roster and the stats. They weren't missing anybody. It wasn't because of anybody being held out or injuries. Everybody played. Everything was normal, straight across the board, and they beat them 67-66. Their coach, Michael Meek, will join us at 12:30 today on the Joe Beaver Show. Mike Parker will join us at 11:30, and we'll get a lay of the land from Vegas. But Michael Meek will join us. He's got a great story, coached at Eastern Oregon and has many years under his belt in high school in the state of Oregon. He was at Westview for a number of years and had that program as being a top-line program. It's always different when you go from high school to college, though, TJ, because it's a different animal. Mm. Recruiting.
Yeah.
It's about recruiting.
Yeah.
And you don't recruit in high school, you know, allegedly. But you have what you get in your public district. But you have to go out and find some people. And I just did a quick perusal of their roster. They have three kids from Australia and three kids from New Zealand.
Wow.
And a few from, like, one from New Hampshire and a couple of Oregonians. They have some Oregonians, but not very many. It's really an interesting makeup of rosters. So Michael Meek will join us at 12:30. I really look forward to that conversation. You know, on its merit, we thought, well, let's get him on, you know, just to talk about such a great turnaround and what happened and all of that. And then I said to Mike, I go, well, not only that, but the Beavers are going to be in their league next year. So it's a little preview of that.
It's going to be in their league, and it could be very likely these two match up at Gill Coliseum next weekend. Yeah. It's possible. The latest bracketology, as I was looking this morning, the Beavers are not supposed to play Portland. They are supposed to
go to Albany.
I haven't. Yeah, so they will be in Corvallis, but they'll be playing Cal Baptist instead of Portland. But I think yesterday it was Portland in that 14 seed in
I think
Corvallis.
It changes every.
But they're still in Albany. Yeah, they're in one of they're in the Albany side of the bracket. But I mean, Michael Meek is also like right off the sort of Scott Rook tree of George Fox. 9 seasons at George Fox before that.
Wow.
A lot of connections.
Look, go to George Fox if you need a coach, whatever sport it is.
Yeah, so that should be an exciting conversation, and really, what an exciting result! It's awesome.
I think it is cool, and they've gone to the tournament now. I think 3 out of the last 5 years, which they went 30 years without going at all. Mm. So I love this time of year. This week, I played this morning 3 different play-by-play calls of men's smaller conference finals, Horizon League. I can't remember what the other league was. And then St. Mary's beating Gonzaga last night. Mm-hmm. But they were in control that whole time. I turned it on. It was 39-30 and watched it for a while. They maintained their lead. They won it 69-60. Gonzaga's just not the Gonzaga that they've been this year. And that's okay. You're not going to be on top every year, especially when you're a smaller school in a smaller area and you're not expected to be. I think you're expected to be good at Gonzaga now for every single year. So that is a little bit of an anomaly. But you know, cut them some slack for not being, you know, a top 5 team like they have been. It seems like every year. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see how the men's tournament shakes out and what the field will be. I don't like UConn's still an overwhelming favorite. Like, are they like they're number one?
Yeah. Yeah, because they've held it the longest. Yeah. There's a lot of teams that were number one at some point this year, but they kind of have been the most.
Yeah. Not like. Houston's spent a good chunk of time as number one as well.
Yeah, and they're absolutely dangerous.
Yeah.
Not offensively. They can't hit the, you know,
broadside of a barn. But they could keep you from hitting the broadside of a barn, too.
Unbelievable defense. Which is really strange because the Houston team that played the Beavers for a chance at the Final Four just 3 years ago just flew up and down the court. So a lot of changes in just 3 years. Speaking of that, this story broke just minutes before coming on the air, and we'll talk with Mike Parker. He already talked with Wayne Tinkle for the pregame show, and Wayne is going to be back next year. You know, if there was any consideration for him not coming back, any listeners out there about his record and some of the disappointment that Oregon State has seen these last couple of years, especially the 3-win season that we had. But according to Nick Daschle, he spoke with Scott Barnes, and Wayne's coming back. He has 3 years and $8.7 million remaining on his contract after this season and has the backing of athletic director Scott Barnes and will return for his 11th season. Since reaching the Elite Eight in 2021, though, OSU has struggled, posting records of 3-28, 11-21, and 13-18 following the disastrous 3-win season. Tinkle turned the Beavers roster upside down and went for a rebuild by signing a handful of high school seniors, which I thought was a great move. And then you've got some improvement there. Mm-hmm. So what is it up to 13-18 now? And we'll see what happens today. But I'll tell you what, it couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. And I get it, fans out there. We don't care about nice. We want wins. All right. Well, He's coming back. That's the official word from Daschle talking with Scott Barnes.
And there's belief that between Scott Barnes and Wayne Tinkle, that there will be a significant, this is a key word there, significant step forward next year. And
well,
retaining
so.
The current roster and the core of the roster is a number one priority in the offseason. So it starts there. Before they start counting wins and losses next year, that's, you know, as soon as this day ends, that's what it's going to be. Like, that's going to be the full-on effort for what this staff is going to go into next year.
I think we all know, though, it's no assumption.
No, not at all.
But it's no assumption that you're going into an easier league.
No, it's not.
It is across the board, but it's not individually.
It is at the bottom. It is at the bottom.
Right.
But at the top, not necessarily.
Uh-uh.
No, we just opined of how sort of mediocre the Pac-12 was this year. You can make an argument that the Pac-12 is the third best basketball conference on the West Coast.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You could be going into a more difficult league to win in.
Exactly.
Especially if you want to win the conference tournament.
Now, the women, on the other hand, I think can dominate. They'll have everybody back, assuming they'll have everybody back, because there were no seniors this year. If nobody leaves and this core group goes to the West Coast Conference, they should absolutely dominate. I know Gonzaga is a good team, and the Pilots are coming on, but come on, this is a top five team, a top 10 team in the country.
Yeah.
Hanging with top five and beating top five teams in Colorado and hanging with Stanford. This is a great team that, if it comes back next year, should dominate the West Coast Conference. Men's side, different story.
Yeah. I always get a chuckle looking at the West Coast Conference tournament bracket. Just the wackiest, weirdest looking bracket I think I've ever seen in my life. But it's almost genius for a conference that puts its priorities that it wants its top teams in the tournament and getting that automatic bid no matter what. Like, I saw it framed this way, like, credit to them for setting up their top seeds for only having to play two games in the conference tournament. If you're a bottom seed, you have to play like six.
Is that
games
how they? I haven't even checked it out.
Yeah, it is.
Oh,
so
man.
For every like two spots you're up, you get another bye in the regular season bracket. And it makes sense. Like, you want your good teams in the tournament because it reflects well on you.
Yeah.
It's difficult. You don't want, like, with the Pac-12, they only get one bye, and you still got to win three games if you get a bye.
Yeah.
You need to win the quarters, you need to win the semis, and then you need to win the finals. Well, in the West Coast Conference, if you're in the top two seeds, you go right to the semis. You don't have to play anything else. You don't have to risk, like, having a bad day. Like, what Gonzaga just did. Like, that could happen in a semifinal, and you all of a sudden it looks like a quad four loss on your resume because you lost to someone with a KenPom rating of 200, but because you shot the ball terribly from three that day, and you don't want that.
No, you don't.
Your whole season just went to waste.
Exactly. Exactly. Although, while they set it up nicely, representation by their league champion or tournament champion, you still want to get as many teams in as you can if you're good enough to get two, maybe three from that conference.
Yeah.
You don't want it to be too hard for everybody else.
It's still probably a three-bid league, right? Give or take two to three on a given year. But like, that's what the Pac-12 is this year. It's like a three-bid league.
Yeah.
Whoever wins it, unless somebody like Oregon State rattles off four wins in a row and wins the tournament and steals a bid. I mean, this is like a... Like, the only two guarantees, really, in the tournament are Washington State and Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's it. I think Oregon's kind of on the bubble. I think they're on the bubble.
If they win a couple games, I don't know.
And it's...
What do you... I just thought of something. I know we'll take a break and get Mike on. But could the West Coast Conference work a deal to take the dates and the times for both the MGM Grand for the women... And what do they call it?
T-Mobile Arena
for the men.
Can they afford
and
that?
Take over what the Pac-12 had? Because it's still the Pac-12, and yes, they're going to call it 12, not 2. And maybe they could say, hey, we have this. But then again, did the contract end, or does the Pac-12 still have a contract, any years left on the contract for the two arenas?
Can they afford that? Do you have to pay for it? Yeah, I assume you have to pay for it.
Yeah, you do. You do. I would think they could pay for it.
The West Coast Conference already plays their tournament in Vegas.
They do, but they play it at Orleans Arena, which isn't not quite as nice.
Well.
But, you know, just a thought.
It could
because
be.
There's some vacancy.
It'll be available. But isn't the Big 12 moving its tournament to Vegas?
Well, I don't know. But if the Pac-12 has any years remaining on their contract, just because they were forced to dissolve should not punish Oregon State and Washington State. So those dates for those two arenas should still be theirs. And then they could verbally say, okay, we're not going to use them because the league that we're in now, the West Coast Conference, has a different deal. But maybe they could say, hey, let's just use it and tell the West Coast Conference, of which they're a brand new member temporarily, go ahead and use our house. It's like renting out your beach house because it became available.
Perhaps. Yeah, perhaps. I mean, there might be some concerts that want to grab that grab that availability too, and other events.
The only way it works is if the Pac-12 still had a few years remaining, and they hadn't moved on those open dates yet, which is probably not the case. I doubt it would work, but it was just a thought.
So as I'm looking right now, three bids for the pack. That's it. And one of them's in the first four. Colorado.
Yeah.
Colorado and Virginia are projected in the latest
Colorado
bracketology. Colorado and Virginia.
How high do they think that Washington State will go?
Sixth seed. Really? So they're in.
Really?
Washington State's on the sixth line. Arizona's on the two line. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Like that's when your third best team in your conference is in the first four.
And do we, meaning the remaining two, get units from this year's results?
Yeah. They're conference units. Yep.
That will last 6 years.
In theory.
Go Colorado, Washington State, Arizona.
I mean, so you want a first four win, that's a free one.
Yeah, we've become the biggest fans of other teams, which, you know, I've always been that way when it comes to tournament time. But I love it. This is my second favorite or tied for first favorite time of the year, along with college football and bowl games. Just love March Madness. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Doc Parker standing by. Get his thoughts. What's going on down in Vegas and what's the mood like? It is the Joe Beaver Show for this Wednesday, along with TJ Mathewson. I'm John Warren. Back after this on 1240 Joe Radio. All right. We're trying to connect with Mike Parker. Last time we had him on, he said he had his phone in his pocket and he didn't hear it or feel it. And I think that's the case this time around. So Doc will probably call us back at any time here coming up in this next little bit of time. Your trip, we need to get to that.
Mm.
I don't know how much time we're going to have, but we don't get in too deep, but how was it? I know you got passes to go wherever you wanted to. Excuse me. And I imagine it was a vastly different experience than it was when you were a student.
Wow. I could not say how much different it was when I was a student. Like, just felt like when you're a student, you're sort of intruding on something you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
That's what, to be honest, that's what I thought it felt like. It felt uncomfortable. It always felt like I was walking somewhere I shouldn't be.
Yeah.
That I was like in someone's way, that I was breaking some sort of rule, that everyone would just kind of look at it and just go, oh, what the hell are these guys doing here?
Yeah.
Who are these guys? But it couldn't have been any different this time. Like walking around, I just felt like, oh, this feels so normal. This feels normal. This feels, you know, relaxed. It feels like spring training should. And I mean, it's amazing. So we can get into a little bit more detail of it.
I look forward to hearing.
It's good. I did a little bit of a monologue to start yesterday's show, but
yeah,
still plenty more
for them
to talk
on
about it. It's so cool. So awesome. Can't recommend it enough.
Awesome. All right. I knew that Mike would call back. He always does. And that it was just a quick little, didn't hear or see the phone or whatever. This time it happens to be an elevator, huh, Doc?
Yeah, an elevator that suddenly got very busy. My goal was to try to sneak onto the elevator, get down, and after our conversation together here on the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio and the Joe Beaver app and all the other places that one can find it, my hope was to sit in the sun, which is broken out of a little bit of cloudy, and sit by the pool for the first time since getting down here and get a little vitamin D action in. And so I wanted to get as close as possible to the sunshine by the pool so that I could just immediately luxuriate in it when our conversation was over. But I picked the time when most other people either had the same idea or were all going to the casino. So from the 8th floor, a stop in the 7th, the 5th, the 4th, and the 3rd on the way down while your call came in. Normally, these elevators at the MGM Grand are incredibly quick. In this case, your call came in while I was on the elevator. The place is so large, guys, that Ryan Lawrence, our director of operations, had to draw a map and send it to all of us in order to get from our rooms to where the team meeting rooms are for meals and film study and study hall and all of those things. Actually required a map. And I'm not a great cartographer. I'm not a good map reader, so I would just try to follow people. You guys know where to go? Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly complex here. But we're getting closer to a place I know a little bit better, and that's T-Mobile Arena here in a couple of hours.
Interesting that you divulge there in that storytelling that you're at the MGM Grand because you've been at the Delano for the past couple of years, haven't
you? That's correct. Yes, we have. Why we moved here, you know, again, why does anything happen? I have no idea. You know, I mean, and that's the right kind of existential question to ask, given that we're heading into our final Pac-12 tournament. And John, on that note, what you said going into break via Car 54, I know there's an app, but it's not as live as 54. Car 54, homage to the great late Fred Gwynne.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm on Car 54 listening and heard you, and I had the very same thought recently. What is there anything to prevent? There probably is, because most good ideas that you have and that occasionally I have never come to pass because there's things to prevent that from happening.
Right.
I like your idea about appropriating the MGM Grand, T-Mobile Arena, as a future site for the WCC tournament. Now, I don't think I've ever been in the Orleans Arena. We may have played there in a non-league game when the Beavers played San Jose State and won by about 45 points a few years ago. It's possible that that was the venue we were in. I can't quite remember. If so, it's fine. It's more than serviceable, but it is not nearly the opulent, wonderful place that T-Mobile is.
And right.
The properties coming into the league, the Beavers and the Cougs, with two great basketball properties in Gonzaga and St. Mary's and a good league. I mean, I think there might be mutual interest in perhaps changing venues. But as you were suggesting going into Braves, contracts may preclude that. But I like the idea.
Well, the only reason why I thought about it was because maybe, just maybe, there's time left on the Pac-12 contract, which the two schools would have, and they could say, hey, you know, as long as it's vacant, why don't we move from here to here? And that would require the West Coast Conference probably to break a contract they wouldn't want to do. But, you know, it's something you would think about. Maybe they could come back to it. I don't know. But it's
not
sad.
A deal breaker. You know, it's not. It's not, you know, the games are primarily for television, as most of these tournaments and things are. I understand that, yes. On the other hand, the presence on the Strip proper in T-Mobile Arena, just a block off the Strip here in Paradise, is a better venue, period. Just better. It's better to be here than to be well off the Strip at the Orleans, with due respect to the Orleans.
Sure.
I mean, even the women's Pac-12 tournament probably had a little extra buzz and energy being right here in the MGM Grand Garden Arena where the Pac-12 men's tournament used to be.
Right.
I haven't talked to Scott or any of the other players, but I imagine it was received. Maybe Ron Callen can share it with us at some point. Probably a little bit, you know, just a little more an uptick in the energy and the attention. When you're on the Strip, you're kind of in the heart and the midst of everything. And I would like to think there'd be a way to keep that going forward for the men, too.
TJ's got questions. I don't want to hog the whole thing, but I do have one quick one about just on the thread that we're talking about. By getting to the finals and winning it all in 21, what were Friday night and Saturday or the finals like as far as crowds? Did the crowds get bigger because of the game, the meaning of the game, or did they get smaller because teams were leaving and there weren't that many fans for the other schools?
Are you talking about 3 years ago when the Beavers made their Elite Eight run?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
it's the only time that you've been able to stay that long.
These are useful discussions and conversations to have, John, because it's not by any means ancient history. It's not like the history I would refer to and will in the Holland America Line matchup history on our pregame show coming up here shortly, wherein I will discuss John Wooden's first year at UCLA coming to Langton Hall and losing to Slats and the Beavers 2 out of 3 to give the Beavers the berth into the NCAA tournament out of the Pacific Coast Conference. That's Wooden's first year. He couldn't get through Slats. Slats goes to the Final Four that year. That's good Beaver basketball history. And that's more, by comparison, certainly ancient than what I'm about to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
But today, in sitting down with Coach Tinkle, two things were a bit of a reminder to him, as we kind of alluded to that Elite Eight run from just 3 years ago, opening with UCLA in the quarterfinals. And Wayne had forgotten that they only played three games. I mean, I don't know. I don't think he would forget that. But he said something about, well, it was in the second round of the tournament when we beat UCLA. Well, yes, but it was the Beavers' first game. There were only 11 teams in the tournament that year. So this is part of the ancient history, recent ancient history, pardon the oxymoron. But in 21, there were only 11 teams. Arizona self-imposed a postseason ban for the investigations that were going on in the program. Arizona was the fifth seed. The Beavers, which were sixth, were moved into the fifth seed. And therefore had a first round bye. So yes, it was second round action, but they did because they were the fifth seed. You think about how history and all of that, I mean, that whole thing took shape in a very bizarre kind of way. Arizona didn't come down here in 21. Neither did I. I called those Elite Eight games, Johnny, as you remembered calling games from Research Stadium.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Remember that? I didn't come down here, and there were no crowds. The only people, you know, and Scheffler could speak in far more detail because he was here, but Trevor Kramer, who's now the communications assistant director for men's basketball for the SID for men's hoops now, wasn't then. Scheffler was. But there were maybe 200 people, families and close friends of the program that were allowed in to T-Mobile. And Wayne said, oh, my gosh, Doc, I forgot you had to call those games from Reeser, Wayne says to me today.
Yeah.
So, two things. It was only three rounds, even though the Beavers were the fifth seed. They only had to play three games because Arizona wasn't here. And secondly, in answer to your question, did the crowds diminish? They stayed pretty steady, about 200 people for all the games for the various teams. And the Beavers got through UCLA in overtime in game one, a game they trailed by 16 points in with 2 minutes to go in the first half, came back and won, then beat Oregon, then beat Colorado, then won three more, and we're still getting paid for that here 3 years later.
Mike, you're mentioning the conversation you're having with Wayne that'll come up here on the pregame show. The news came out this morning, reported by Nick Daschle, that Wayne will be back for next season, and I'm curious if you were able to get a sense from Wayne of, you know, the tournament is upcoming here. There are games in front of them, but also the off-season plan and the priority list going into next season.
Yeah, and because of the timing of all of that, there was no allusion to that apparent report. Now, you're telling me now something, TJ, when exactly? I'm curious. This is just live on the radio. I'm sitting down here. Whoa, what are you doing by the pool? How come you're online? I'm just saying I did not see that come through my Twitter feed or storyline. How long ago did that hit?
It was about 10:30 this morning.
Yeah, right before the show.
10:30. Okay. Okay. Then I had already conducted my interviews with Wayne and Eric Reveneau. As you know, John, we were talking and you were planning to have me on the show. And I was on my way to get Dexter Ocano, Eric Reveneau, and Wayne Tinkle. And all of those things will be coming up on the pregame. All of that was done before that report was officially filed, and Wayne and I naturally have talked off and on, you know, about things, you know, during the course of this season and his sense of things going forward. And he's always been pretty optimistic about that, what you and Nick have apparently reported, that he was going to be given the opportunity to continue to try to build up this young core group of, I think, three really good sophomore players in Mike Ritai, Tyler Bilodeau, and Jordan Pope. Retention of those guys, Pope and Bilodeau in particular, will be very important. And I think there's also, and Thomas Endong and a couple of other younger players that have a chance, I think, to improve and get better to keep this thing going. But in fairness to Wayne, that's not a subject, unless it had just been reported and he wanted to talk about it and he didn't bring anything. It's not like, hey, Mike, did you hear it? No, that's not necessarily news that he would, I think, want to explore.
Yeah.
But I do know he's excited about the core group, but he's much more locked in on trying to beat UCLA, which they've been close to doing twice, both at Gill and in Pauley. They were in both of those games with chances to win. I think he thinks that this tournament sets up for the Beavs to maybe, like they did 3 years ago, really surprise some people, go on a bit of a run. And even though they're not quite as equipped as they were with that veteran group then, that made it all the way to the Elite Eight ultimately, I think they're very capable of winning today and tomorrow. I really am. I think they can. And then after that, we'll see. But I do think they could get out and keep this run, keep the season going longer. But I'm glad to hear what you just said, guys. I really am. I love Wayne Finkel, I think, and his staff. And I like the young core group that they've got. If they can find a way to bolster it going into the WCC with shrewd use of the portal, and you know, I think there's a chance for the program to get on an upward trajectory, and maybe that, in a sense, starts with making a decent run down here in Vegas. I hope so. So I'm glad to hear that news, but it's not something, TJ, that we brought up in the pregame show.
And, Doc, it's not just UCLA. It would be the next game if the Beavers were to win in advance. Two close games against the Ducks this year. I mean, two.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, TJ. I think that in both cases, in both instances, you know, they've shown the ability to hang and compete with those teams, and just, but for, you know, a stretch. And we just saw, I think, a great example, whether you guys have, I didn't car 54 everything, so what appears to be a near miraculous victory by Michael Meek and the Portland Pilots, losing by 50 and then beating that same team down here to get the automatic berth. These are the types of things that can happen in postseason play. So just because the Beavers lost twice to UCLA doesn't mean they're doomed to a third by any stretch of the imagination. And those two games were very close in both Gill and Pauly, with the Beavers just hitting a couple of rough patches here and there. I think if they can take care a little bit better care of the basketball, be a little better in shot making, UCLA's lost five of their last six. You know, they're a sub-500 team coming in. They're vulnerable. You know, they're beatable. So I think the Beavs, by all means, could win today. And as you are alluding to, TJ, the Oregon games have been competitive, to be sure. Two-point loss at home and a very competitive loss in Eugene. So, yes, TJ, to your point, I think the Beavs have a chance. Now, you remember we talk about these swings. One other thing that may come up on Holland American Line in terms of history, Paul Valenti, the late, great, bless his heart, second-year coach in 65-66, taking over for Slats in his second year, went to Pauly, and the Beavers' first game ever in Pauly. Final score, UCLA 79, Oregon State 35.
Ooh.
2 weeks later, a couple of weeks, 79-35. A couple of weeks later at Gill, with essentially the Pac-8 title on the line, Oregon State 64, UCLA 51. And the Beavers went on to the tournament. They win the league. They beat Elvin Hayes in the tournament. They lose to Utah in the Elite Eight. Had they beaten Utah in the Elite Eight, they would have played the Glory Road team in the Final Four.
Wow. But
it's interesting. It's interesting how, you know, these little twists and turns and how all of our histories are affected by these little results here and there. But the point is, you can lose big to a team and still come back and shock the world and beat them. Portland proved it. The Beavers' two losses to UCLA doesn't mean they're doomed to a third.
And we'll have Coach Meek on at 12:30 to talk
Excellent.
About that very thing. So I look forward to that conversation.
Well,
TJ and I are looking forward to
he's
that.
He's got the Scott Ruiz type resume.
Yeah.
You know, 9 years at Fox and now doing a great job with a women's basketball program in the WCC. And I imagine he'll have good things to say about Coach Ruiz. And their shared experiences, and whether they're going to, I know, doesn't bracketology, TJ, or somebody say that they're bound? I mean, it could very well be Portland against the Beavers at Gill.
I think
to open the tournament.
Yesterday
according
it was
to one bracketologist.
Yesterday it was. Today it was Cal Baptist. So up in the air still.
Okay. Whatever the case, but it's a good state of Oregon story, no doubt. And I'm glad you're going to have Coach Meek on. His daughter's on the team. I mean, I don't know much more about their story now, but I think a lot of people are suddenly scrambling to learn more after their amazing victory yesterday, too, where, you know, again, the statistics, numbers, trends, that you just can throw them out in postseason play at times in that Gonzaga had won 24 straight, and the Bulldogs were the number one three-point shooting team in the country, percentage-wise, and they went 5-for-20 against Mike Meek's Pilots from three. So that given day can happen. It can happen for anybody who locks in and focuses, and I'm hoping that's the case for the Beavs today and this week in Vegas.
All right, last thing, Doc. Is there a pall over the week, or is it business as usual? And I think I know the answer to that. I'll be surprised if you say there is a pall, because it just seems like from the outside, nope, business as usual. The women's tournament was the best ever, and they've crowned a champion in USC, and we'll see you next year without the we'll see you next year.
Yeah. John, it's interesting because, you know, whenever Don McLean and I were walking in together yesterday, getting our media credentials, but the media credentials didn't quite work because it was just a credential. And we were supposed to have a sticker to put on the credential that allowed us in yesterday. The credential was good for every other day, but you needed a credential and a sticker to get into T-Mobile yesterday. So Don and I are waiting for stickers to be delivered from the powers that be inside. And the guy who was the gatekeeper said, yeah, it was this way last year. The Pac-12, they can't get this sticker thing right. We had the problem last year getting in. We're having it again this year. And Don and I both about the same time said, well, you won't have to worry about that next year. And we did say that. And the guy, oh, well, good. Well, they're going to get it fixed. And we just let it go. You know, I mean, No, they're not going to get it fixed, but there ain't going to be one. Not like this anyway.
Nope.
But whenever you bring it up, and I brought it up with Ashley Adamson and Lee, who I'm seeing, we stop and reflect and are saddened by it, but none of us have any time. Wayne Tinkle, I asked him near the end of our interview, sort of that bonus question, you understand this, guys, who've done tournaments. Our airtime is 2 o'clock, and the tip is scheduled for straight down at 2:30. So, John, you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
It's possible that that could happen, and we have a very tight, fast-moving, 30-minute tight window. But we may not. The game may not tip till 2:45 or 3 o'clock, depending on what happened ahead of me. So I did. I did interviews with all three people: Akano, Reveno, and Wayne, with the two models in mind. And so, in the last question to Wayne, in case we go long, I asked him a little bit about what you're just now talking about, and he said, "You know, Mike, when we get to the end of the season, whenever that is, and we're looking forward to the, you know, to the transition and what's next." Then we'll talk about it. I'll have more thoughts about it. Right now, I just got to find a way to slow down at Dembona, and we'll take it from there. So he knows it's sad. We all know it's sad. We all know if we wanted to, we could wallow in the sadness. But nobody has time for that in our respective jobs. We have jobs to do. We have games to play. We'll worry about what's next when the time comes.
Yeah, I think that's the most accurate part of any answer if you ask that question of anybody, is there's just not enough time. There's too many things to do, and it really won't hit us until it's long after the fact. And it's hitting me for women's basketball because it was such a great tournament with such great teams.
Yes.
But anyway, hey, thanks for your time.
Yeah.
Hour from now, we'll hear you. Was it 12 o'clock? 2 hours from now, we'll hear you. And go home and watch it and all that, and let's see what happens and get that next game against Oregon at the same time tomorrow.
And great job on getting Coach Meek on. I hope you hear a little of that on Car 54. Thanks, guys, for having me on, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Doc.
Let's get this last break in, and we'll close up shop here in this first hour on 1240 Joe Radio. All right, just about another minute and a half left in this hour. Your phone calls are always welcome when we're not interviewing anybody at 541-497-5356, Downward Dog phone line, and the University of Honda text line, same number, 541-497-5356. And we just have one interview coming up at 1230. That'll be Michael Meek, head coach of the Portland Pilots in his fifth year already. I remember when he was hired. I just, you know, it was just one of those peripheral sports stories. And I can't believe it's already his fifth year. And he has done a tremendous job at the University of Portland. And it's a great story. Mm-hmm. They upset Gonzaga last night, but it's also kind of a preview of what's to come for the next 2 years with Oregon State women's basketball in the West Coast Conference.
And Everett Hartman texting in a really cool Corvallis connection that we'll be sure to bring up with Coach Meek, the assistant coach of Michael Meeks, Jared Gibson, Corvallis High School graduate of 1997, was the head coach at Lynn Benton before moving to Portland this year. He and Everett Hartman coached together at Western Oregon on the men's staff for 2004 through 2008, and we worked at LB together.
Cool. Great stuff.
It's pretty cool.
That is really cool.
Cool
local
connection.
I love that.
And I'm sure Michael Meek would not complain if the only place he has to go to play a regional is hop on a bus and drive an hour and a half south to Corvallis.
Absolutely. All right, next hour coming up.
Attention! 1240 Joe Radio welcomes you to the Joe Beaver Show, the only show on the electric radio dealing with life's greatest questions.
How are the beavers doing this season?
But with sympathy for life's hierarchy of needs.
Will you go to lunch? Go to lunch. Will you go to lunch?
Yes, please go to lunch. Take a long lunch. And join us as we ponder life's big question.
How are the beavers doing this season?
Groucho is in.
This is the last hat of its kind. The beavers have stopped making them. They're all out playing football.
Fields, he's in.
What's that, a beaver's tail?
And you, you're welcome in to the Joe Beaver Show, where we're not concerned with life's trifling questions.
What do you know about life after death?
But with visions of Pac-10 glory.
You know how it's gonna be.
And the inside scoop.
Give it to me straight, Doc.
So join the party.
Let's make Joe famous.
Sure, I'm willing.
And now, here are your hosts, John.
That's the word in the street, Johnny.
Warren and Mike.
I haven't dabbled in Kierkegaard.
Parker, on the home of the Beavers, 1240 Joe Radio.
We just heard from Doc Parker. He's down in Las Vegas. They're back at the MGM Grand getting ready for a game at T-Mobile Arena this afternoon at 2:30 tip-off on the Pac-12 Network and, of course, on the radio. And we'll have it on our stream as well. And you'll hear Mike Parker's play-by-play. It'll begin at 2. He's right about, TJ, he's so right about tournaments. And I learned this 30 years ago during high school tournaments. There's a set time you have to go on the air, but it isn't necessarily the time. In fact, this is interesting. The very first experience I had as a kid listening on the radio to Daryl Ani to the Far West Classic in Portland, for your knowledge and anybody your age or younger, it was a great tournament, Christmas tournament that teams came out, and they just don't do it anymore. Too many games, and you had, what, 8 teams? Was it 8 teams that started it out? Anyway, it was a great tournament. Magic was out here. Bobby Knight, the Indiana Hoosiers were out here. Whole 9 yards. So Gonzaga was in the Far West Classic, and the Gonzaga game against whomever was going long. And Daryl is filling time, and he was doing interviews and filling time and calling a little bit of play-by-play and sprinkling in just for fun. And I remember him saying, wow, this Stockton kid is really good. I'll never forget that. And then John Stockton goes on to be a Hall of Famer. But, wow, this Stockton kid is really good. And, oh, by the way, and then he went back to his interview.
If we're talking delayed start times, nothing will top the Pac-12 baseball tournament the first time they did it.
Yeah.
When they tried to make it the same format as the basketball tournament and then realizing, oh, well, the game before it goes 15 innings. That's an issue.
Yeah, right. They didn't think about it.
There was a game there where I think Doc came on at 7 o'clock and they didn't start until 9:45.
He had to kill 2 hours.
Oh, no, they didn't. He did the pregame show and signed off.
No, they on basketball tournaments like this, if it's give or take, 45 minutes.
Yeah, at least there's a timer.
You have a timer, and you have to go on, and you might have to kill an extra half hour at most.
Yeah.
And you're prepared to do that.
Usually won't be longer than that unless the power goes out or something. Right. Well, if the power goes out, you're not on the air, so don't have to worry about that anyways.
Well, if the power went out in the first game and it delayed it for 45 minutes or an hour and it's back on again, you still go back on the air.
At the
set time because of all the affiliates and the network and the organization in that way. So anyway, the phone line is 541-497-5356. It is brought to you by Downward Dog. And the text line, of course, which is always active, is 541-497-5356. That is the University Honda text line. On the Downward Dog line is Dave from Tumwater. Hey, Dave.
Good afternoon, John and TJ. Just to pick up on a couple of items you guys have talked about. Just this morning, I made my travel arrangements, flights at least, to head down for the last Pac-12 baseball tournament. And we were there for the first one, which was brutal. I mean, if you think it was bad playing in it for 3 hours, imagine attending it for 12 or 14. So this will be more humane. But as far as Wayne, so this will be my second baseball comment in a week, and I can go a whole year without making up,
basketball
comment. But regarding Wayne Tinkle, TJ had kind of a candid show yesterday, so I'm going to tap into that a little bit. I've never said anything critical about Wayne. I won't. But the practical matter is, the university is not in a position, having just gotten $10 million from the state legislature, to buy out $8 million of a coach's contract. I mean, that look is so bad, it's just unimaginable. But Wayne Tinkle will always have my high regard for one thing. I saw him do with my own eyes in person in Omaha, and I've talked about this before, but it bears re-mentioning when people do the right thing. When Luke Heimlich was warming up for that first game in the finals against Arkansas, and he's getting a lot of grief for reasons that are as readily conceived as expressed, he's getting a lot of grief from the Arkansas fan base before the cops could get out there, and they were there for the rest of the series. Before the cops could get there, Wayne was one of the first people from, I'll call it the Oregon State community, mm-hmm. to try to have some influence on how that situation was going to play out. I was kind of latecomer to that. Mike actually called me from the press release, Dave, what's going on out there? And I told him, but Wayne was front and center in that defensive maneuver, and he'll always have my regard for that. So my reason for calling, though, I want to go back to a thread, TJ, you and I had a while back. John might have been there, might have been when you were going solo again. And this is the kind of thing that Russo does a lot. And so if you've got enough time to bear with me on this, fellas. So I'm referring to Travis Bezanna. So the way I think of it, Bezanna is the if I were to do a Mount Rushmore of modern Oregon State baseball stellar players, Jacoby Ellsbury, mm-hmm. Adley Rutschman, mm-hmm. Travis Bezanna. Maybe I haven't figured out who the fourth would be, but is it conceivable, even as the fantastic career Ellsbury had and the great start the Rutschman's off to, is it not conceivable that Bezanna is the best baseball player at Oregon State in the program's history? For example, he's going to set the record for most stolen career. This is a time where you need to get the laptop out, TJ, and do some quick stat checks for me, if you would be so kind. He's going to set the record for most stolen bases. I did a little online research. He's only 5 career home runs behind Rutschman, who kind of has an identity as a power hitter. And I was never very good at math, but I'm just wondering, TJ, where on the all-time batting average, career batting average list, does Travis Bezanna land? Because I'm thinking he's ahead of Rutschman. Because Adley had kind of a bad, for him, he had an awful year. His freshman year was, kind of mediocre. He had a nice coming out later on, but I only had 2 home runs, kind of hit in the 230s, and then he really blossomed. Ellsbury, I suspect, was a 300 hitter all 3 years. But if you consider, he's a great defender. He can run well, obviously, with the stolen base totals. He can hit for average. He can hit with power. I'm just beginning to make the case, fellas, and this is going along something you and I talked about Friday night, John. Travis Bezanna's lining up as being another first pick of the first round. And just within the Oregon State framework, do you not think he might be setting it with a good, strong finish this year? He could end up being the best 3-year player Oregon State baseball has ever had.
So you're saying best college player, not best pro, right? Just so we're
Then you can extrapolate,
sure.
Excuse me, from someone's
you can
college experience. Not perfectly. I mean, let's just take 2 reasonably recent examples. Adley Rutschman, Trevor Larnach.
Mm-hmm.
Both great college players. But Rutschman looks like he's going to have a better pro career than Trevor. Of course, Trevor started with a better team than Rutschman. There was a lower floor in Baltimore than there was in the Twin Cities. But yeah, I'm just making the argument, best baseball player in the modern era. I mean, I can't speak to the 60s, 70s, and 80s. To me, modern baseball at Oregon State starts with Pat Casey. Late 90s, Ellsbury's kind of the first star. Rutschman's the second star. Bazzana seems like the third era star. That's where I'm going with it.
So how many career home runs is Bazzana at right now? You said he's four behind Adley?
Yes. Well, let me look at my notes here.
So I see that. So Adley is at 28. That would put Bazzana at 24. He's currently outside the top 10. But if you were to hit 11 more from now until the end of the season, he would be first all time, which he very well could do. That I wouldn't put that past him.
Bazzana's at 23. He had six as a freshman last year. He had six as a freshman, 11 last year, six this year. Rutschman's home run totals. Let me see if I got this here. He has 28 total. I can't make out my notes on the early total. So he's five behind Rutschman with a whole conference season plus postseason in front of him.
So here's where I will go into defense of Adley. So I think there could be some arguments thrown around here, but if you're going to give a nudge to Adley, first of all, Adley hit 400 twice. I'm not a huge batting average guy, but hitting 400 twice is a pretty incredible feat. Bazzana could do that.
411 and 407.
Yeah, I mean, Bazzana could do that this year. But that is quite an accomplishment. I mean, it truly is, and his on-base percentage goes on top of that. Second of all, Adley plays a more rigorous defensive position at a higher level. Travis Bazzana, his only knock right now is that he's not a shortstop, and he's not a current shortstop at college, and he's probably not a future shortstop in the pros. As far as from the scouting reports, I know, like, that's his only knock. So if you were to find a reason for Adley, I think those would be two of them. Now, there are other tools that Bazzana has. He's faster than Adley. I wouldn't say he's a more complete hitter, because Adley did pretty much everything you could ask for at the collegiate level, walking and controlling the strike zone and switch hitting on top of all of that Bazzana does not do. But I think you could say 1A, 1B, I think would be a little bit more fair at this point, Dave, of what Bazzana would have to do.
Where does Bazzana stack up against, again, lifetime statistics with Jacoby Ellsbury? Do you have access to those numbers?
So I'm looking at the historical stats right now. Jacoby Ellsbury finished his Oregon State career with a .365 batting average. So let me pull up. I don't have Bazzana's page pulled up right now, Dave. I will have it up here momentarily. I don't believe Bazzana's that high yet. He's currently not, at least as of the beginning of the season, he is not in the top 10 for batting average. Let me look at on base as well, so I can look at his career stats. So let's see. So Travis right now, his career on base percentage is .477. His career batting average is .352. So his current batting average would rank outside the top 10. Where's the on-base percentage here? It would be down right. There's total bases, RBIs, slugging percentage. He would be in the top 10. His all-time slugging percentage is .587. That would put him sixth in all-time slugging percentage. So let's see. I don't have his on-base percentage would be a good one to comp, but I don't see it on this page right here. So,
but just to recap the one point, TJ, sounds like Bazzana's lifetime batting average is about 10 points lower than Jacoby Ellsbury's.
Yes, it is.
Catch it about right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. Total hits for Travis. He's at 191. Outside the top 10, he will be inside the top 10 as the season finishes up. So he could finish really strong, go into the top 10 of hits, be the all-time leader in home runs, and such like that. And again, I wish they had on-base percentage on. He's pretty high up there. He's got a .477 career on-base percentage. He's close to Adley, I would imagine, in that category. I'm not... I don't have Adley's career Oregon State on base percentage, but I would imagine it's probably near .500, right around there. So I mean, he's got a chance.
How would you, How would you compare Ellsbury's stolen base total with Bazzana's, which is he's in his mid-50s by now, surely.
So Bazzana right now is at, they don't have stolen bases on. Oh, here we go, 55 stolen bases. And Jacoby is at, yeah, and Jacoby's at 60. So, like you said, five away from Jacoby, and he's eight away from the record right now.
And what was Jacoby Ellsbury's lifetime home run record at Oregon State?
Jacoby had career home runs. Let me see. Is he in the top 10? Should be. No? I don't think. No, Jacoby's not. He's outside the top 10 of home runs at Oregon State.
So Bazzana will likely break Ellsbury's stolen base number.
Yeah.
Home run total. He's gonna have to maintain the 400 percentage he's got this year, but he has a shot of having a lifetime career batting average higher than Ellsbury as well.
Correct.
Add more home runs than Rutschman.
Yeah, so he's gonna have more power than Adley. He's gonna hit for a higher average than Jacoby and have more stolen bases than Jacoby, who's, you know, known for his speed. So, and maybe in terms of the all around, Dave, at the plate, the argument is certainly there for Travis Bazzana to be a clear number one. The argument is present.
And that's all a caller can hope to do is just to make credible as a line of argument. And needless to say, I mean, I find myself in the awkward position since my love and admiration for Adley Rutschman is so well documented through the history of this show. But it just points out the level of play we see routinely at second base for Oregon State. And I just wanted to highlight that a little bit, Mad Dog, Mount Rushmore style. And the question of who the fourth best player in the modern era, we'll leave that out there. Maybe Andy from Mitchell or somebody else can call in with some
Jim Wilson.
That, but well, I said, well, let's keep it the modern. Mount Rushmore, John. So
okay.
Anyway, well, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, I just let you guys go. And especially looking things up like that. That's interesting. It's interesting.
It's certainly an argument.
I'd hate to see Adley get taken over.
Yeah, but see, I still, even after that conversation, mm-hmm. Adley has the advantage of being a switch hitter one and playing the most valuable defensive position at the highest level too. Mm. Something Bazzana does not do.
Yeah.
He doesn't. That's his knock. He doesn't. He is a second baseman as a pro. Adley is a catcher.
And that's,
you're up the middle, that's valuable. You're catcher, shortstop, center fielder. Those are one A, like all number ones.
Mm-hmm.
Second base is not that. If you're playing at second base, it's because you can't play shortstop.
That's a good point.
And not saying Travis can't, but there are other guys who play it better than he does. And if you're gonna have the all around skill set, then and you want to be the best. You want to be the best ever, potentially best modern player ever.
Mm-hmm.
You need every checkpoint you can get.
And well, I know that Jim Wilson's, 20 home runs is the record?
In a season?
Is it 20 or 21? Jimmy Wilson's
all-time?
21 all-time home runs have, that still holds. And I know Adley was on pace and then things slowed down at the end of his time. Trevor Larnach, I think, made an assault on that.
Mm-hmm.
But
is that in a season?
Yeah,
or in one season? Yeah,
yeah. And nobody has eclipsed it
yet.
Yeah,
Melton went for it too. Get it. So Travis, right now, so six. I don't know if Travis can hit 20 homers this year. He would. He would probably would have needed to really take advantage of the non-conference.
Yeah.
To do that.
Yeah.
It'd be a little tougher when conference play rolls around. And he's sitting at six, about a quarter of the way through the season. He could get there, but the odds are he's not going to slug 900 the whole season, which is what his slugging percentage currently is. It's a little high.
Continue around 455 in his batting average?
Yeah, hitting around 450. His on-base percentage is nearly 600. Those numbers will probably come down. They will probably.
Well, you know what? That's what's fun about baseball is watching numbers, watching numbers. Sometimes I'll watch a pitcher, and if he's around, 1-3, 1-4, watch the game, and with every strikeout mm-hmm. or every out, the number slightly goes down. And last weekend that happened, and it went from 0.083 up to 3 something because of giving up several runs in one inning. Mm-hmm. And that hurt. Real quick, before we go to the phone, and then we've got Michael Meek from the Portland Pilots coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Oregon State women's basketball will have a watch party on Sunday. This on Twitter. Watch party on Sunday. It says here, doors open at 4 o'clock. The selection show starts at 5 o'clock. And if I zoom in to this particular advertisement, it says, Toyota Club, Research Stadium, free for all fans, and the doors will open at 4 o'clock. The first 1,000 fans receive an exclusive NCAA March Madness poster or sticker. So the first 1,000, that's great. You'll get a poster or a sticker. And again, that's at the Toyota Club level at Research Stadium. Let's go to Dave real quick because we've got to take a break before getting to our guest, Michael Meek. Dave, welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Hey, guys. I like the last conversation. I don't want to get in too much other than I'll just add this about Adley playing catcher. You also got to consider how much better did he make every pitcher that he caught for. Mm-hmm. You know, how much better were those pitchers? And that's something that the second baseman doesn't do 100%. For that pitching staff, right, necessarily. Mm-hmm. So that's just another thing to consider when you're talking about the best all-around or greatest that we've seen. Mm-hmm. Really what I wanted to get to was something that came up probably a week and a half ago, right before Jimmy Anderson passed away. Mm-hmm. We were talking about football and how necessary it would be to get into a power conference, right? And I only bring it up because, you know, listening to the show this last couple of days, the whole coaching staff, it's Oregon State, you know, most of them are, you know, all these guys coming back to try to keep this thing afloat. It's like, you know, one of those Lifetime movies where, you know, all the kids come back to try to save the ranch and, you know, do that kind of thing. It's just kind of how it feels. Yeah. But which is cool. And I think it's great. I think it's probably the best opportunity for that to happen. But if you can't parlay that into get into a power conference, mm-hmm. you know, how long does that even last? And where does that leave us? So I think it's super important. And I know I think you even mentioned, you know, I wouldn't do it if there's, you know, like Stanford and Cal did and not take the money. Well, we've got the money, right? So could we afford to do one or two years without that payout money because we've got
probably,
that
bankroll
there? Probably, yeah.
That's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea. They could probably do that.
You almost have to jump. And I say the ACC is not bad because that puts four teams on the West Coast that were a prior conference before that almost gives us an opportunity to build a division on the West Coast of that ACC where you really do limit the travel, even if it's just for the football program.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty good idea.
Well, and then they have some center teams so that you can go there mostly, and then occasional trips to the Far East would be great. I think that would be a great super conference, and it's not a bad idea. We got to go, Dave. Thanks for the call. Yeah. We can get into more of this later. It's not a bad thought at all. Let's take a timeout. When we come back, we'll talk Portland Pilots basketball with Coach Michael Meek, and it's relative because the Beavers will be playing them in the conference next year, and we'll be in the West Coast Conference tournament next year. I assume down in Vegas. I assume at the Orleans if they continue on there. And they came up with just an incredible victory. And what's more important than that is just really learning about this coach and his run. It's an incredible run. So we'll have that conversation next here on 1240 Joe Radio.
Welcome back to the Joe Beaver Show. We are efforting Portland Pilots head coach Michael Meek. He'll be joining us here momentarily on the Joe Beaver Show. Talk a little bit about their run through the West Coast Conference Tournament and clinching an automatic bid into the NCAA Tournament, defeating Gonzaga, who they had lost to twice by substantial amounts early in the regular season, and now go on and they defeat Gonzaga by a point
and
in the West Coast Conference
back
Tournament.
Back-to-back. Back-to-back titles.
Pretty cool.
3 in 5 years. Now, anybody who grew up in this area knows that the Pilots didn't do that. They did not do that for many, many years until our next guest came along. They would go to the tournament. The last time, I think, was in the late 90s. But as Coach Michael Meek joins us here on the Joe Beaver Show. There's something, Coach, in the water in Newburgh because Pat Casey went there, played there. Pat Bailey, of course, was very successful there. Yeah. And, of course, Scott Ruick just before you. And now you, I mean, it's like everybody who comes out of George Fox is so successful. If there's any athletic administrator left at Fox, they got to be pulling their hair out saying, don't go, don't go. Thanks for joining us, Coach.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate being on. And, you know, I think every coach that's coached at George Fox just knows what a special place that is and, you know, what great people there are there and, you know, how much – you know, athletics are supported. It's just really a really, really great place. And obviously has had some really good coaches there that have coached there. But I think a lot of it, the culture of the whole school is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I was as far as, you know, I always like to see if I might have crossed paths with coaches. I've been either watching or calling games or in school for Oregon prep stuff since the 1970s, and I started calling radio stuff in 1990. And through those years, in fact, I was in the Metro League even before Southwidge was ever built. And I was there before Century and Westview were ever built. And I don't think we did cross paths there because I came here in 99 and started focusing more on college. But I do remember hearing about you and your teams and the tournament that you created there. And it was just fantastic. And then you went on to George Fox. Just to clear it up for myself and TJ, who's with me here, did you then replace Scott when he got the job here at Oregon State?
Yeah. I went from Southridge High School. I was there for 10 years. And then when he left for Oregon State, I took over at George Fox and was there for 9 years.
Yeah.
And then of course, last 5 at Portland.
Now, when you made the jump from high school to George Fox, which is Division III, the recruiting is a little bit different. And then we can talk about University of Portland, where it's even different than D3. In fact, I remember Scott talking about how he was not used to having a secretary or others who would do things for him, because you had to do everything by yourself at George Fox. But what? How much of a difference was that for you in the coaching world to administratively now go from high school to having to find some kids and recruit them to play at the D3 level, and then we could talk about the jump then to D1 college basketball.
Yeah, you know, I think it was new for me. I think everybody kind of takes different paths in being from high school, but, you know, you kind of are in a situation where you have kids that grow up in your area and you know, it's more about probably program and player development. You know, we had a really, really outstanding seventh grade class when I moved to Southridge, really freshman and seventh grade class that kind of helped things took off there. And then, you know, being at George Fox, it, you know, now we're having to, you know, we still work on development a lot. And I think that's something that has really helped our programs is, you know, having that developmental background that you get from working with, you know, high school programs that you start from like the sixth grade up. But now you're so much more dependent on the players you recruit and kind of their development and the habits they have from you know, all the way from sixth grade to high school. And it was definitely an adjustment. I mean, thankfully, you know, Scott had such a great culture at George Fox. And you know, we had several new faces, but we had some really key returners, too, that really helped. And they were just phenomenal as far as just the – how they backed our staff and supported the change and all that, because that, you know, it's not always easy to replace somebody, you know, like a coach like Scott.
Michael Meek joining us, University of Portland head coach. They just won the West Coast Conference tournament yesterday, defeating Gonzaga by a point. Coach, did you have any overlap with Scott in terms of you guys had any sort of relationship before you took that coaching job over for him at George Fox?
You know, we talked a few times, but really didn't know each other that well. You know, he was doing his thing and, you know, having, you know, amazing success there at George Fox. And we crossed paths a few times. We have some, I think, similar mentors in some philosophical similarities in some ways, you know, but everybody does things a little bit different. But, you know, we didn't really know each other great at that point. So it was kind of a brand new kind of thing for me. I obviously knew they had some great success there, but, you know, I was about 30 miles away, and, you know, the majority of the focus that I had was in the high school, you know, the high school game, and, you know, 4 and 6A girls basketball at the high school level is really what a lot of my background was at that point.
Did coaching high school at the level that you did, just unbelievable teams and championships and all of what you created there, on the heels of Brad Smith at Oregon City, see, that was the time I was doing a lot of the games, was when he was dominating nationally, and then you built what you built at South Ridge. But did dealing with coaches from D1, Stanford, Tara Vanderveer, others coming to you to talk with your players, did you learn anything from that? That you take to to Portland when you got the D1 job at the Pilots?
You know, a little bit. I mean, I feel like I really tried to make the recruiting thing the players' thing. So, you know, I felt like they were the ones that earned that right to be recruited, and I really tried to stay out of their recruitment because I felt like at the end of the day, it, you know, it needed to be their decision, their family's decision. So I really, other than passing along, you know, who was communicating to them, you know, and every now and then I would get a call from a coach that maybe want to talk about a player, things like that. I did actually go to a home visit with one of our players. Our point guard actually got recruited by Samford, and it wasn't that often that it happened, but she asked if I would be at her home visits, and she actually, you know, Vanderveer was one of those visits. And that was a cool experience to be a part of that. Now, we don't do home visits anymore, so that part of it's gone, but it was a cool opportunity to meet such a coaching legend at that time.
Let's jump ahead to this season, Michael, and you guys, before you went on the run in the West Coast Conference Tournament, had lost 4 in a row to sort of close out the regular season. You guys did get one last win against Loyola Marymount, but lost 4 in a row before that. The capper of that losing streak was a 50-point loss to Gonzaga, to which you turn around and beat them by a point, 67-66, in the West Coast Conference Championship yesterday, just 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
How were you guys able to do that? How did you flip the switch to swing essentially 51 points net around?
You know, I think every season, I mean, if you look at really any team, you know, I think that each team has different varying levels of talent, and we had clearly have a really talented team and an awesome team. I mean, a team that just has really a great culture, and they get along really well. And that, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, you have highs and lows during the season, and we just kind of hit a point of the year for whatever reason. We just weren't playing with the energy that we needed, and you know, the willingness to play together. And, you know, in a way, I think that game, against an awesome team on their home court on senior night, it was just kind of a rock-bottom game. You know, we hadn't been particularly playing great the few games before, but, you know, we knew we had solid opponents, you know, on the road, you know, for the most part. And, you know, we just kept staying with it. You know, I felt like we really believe in our team culture and staying together and not trying to get too high and too low about things. And our team just did an awesome job of just staying together and, you know, trusting in our staff and, you know, knowing that we could turn things around and probably came back the next game against Loyola Marymount. And I would say up to that point, probably played one of our better games of the season, you know, a Loyola team that's, actually has a former player of mine that played for me at Southridge that's a head coach there now. And, you know, we played them. They played us really close on our home court, and we really controlled, I feel like, the whole game on the road. And then, you know, kind of just that helped gain a little bit of momentum going to the tournament. I think from the film and everything, I think our team just knew that we just didn't bring what we needed to in that first or that second Gonzaga game at their place. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say we thought we'd come out and beat them here, but we knew without a doubt we were way better than that team that showed up, you know, a few weeks before.
You know you're going to get that question more than just today, right?
Yeah.
Well, Coach Mark Michael Meek joining us here on the Joe Beaver Show. Now that you guys have gotten that automatic qualifier, what's your reaction to seeing some bracketologists saying you'll come down here for the region for the first two rounds?
Well, you know, I think we're still kind of in this situation that, you know, we obviously weren't heavily favored to win the tournament, and to come out of that tournament as West Coast Conference champs and have that feeling of just elation. I mean, it was so awesome just to watch our kids celebrate and enjoy that moment, and also doing it off of probably three of the best games we played all year. Like, we just really got in a good rhythm and got some confidence and started to play with the effort that I really felt like we were capable of but probably hadn't been doing all year long. And so I haven't tried to look too far ahead. I think, you know, obviously Oregon State is a phenomenal team and has a huge home court advantage and, you know, all the things like that that we, you know, and I think for us, you know, having a tournament experience is great. I think it would be great to be able to go different places of the country. I think the advantage for us is, other than having to play Oregon State on their home court, you know, we would be able to get some more Portland fans there as well, just because it'd be a little bit closer.
Coach, just a couple more things. And on that, let's take it one step further. You say you don't want to think ahead.
Yeah.
Oregon State coming into the league along with Washington State, what was your initial reaction to that?
I have mixed feelings about it. But I do think that they're two outstanding programs. And, you know, for me, and I think our players, I think, were, you know, like the competitiveness of our you know, league continuing to grow and get stronger. So I think there's a lot of positives with it. I think it also, with two teams that have been at that level, I think it makes it harder to win our tournament too. You know, you add two more teams that should, you know, with their resources and recruiting thing advantages and things like that, at least that they've had in the past, I think that they're, you know, should be near the top of our league, if not the top. And obviously Oregon State has a chance to return a ton of players that, you know, could be very good. You know, they could be as awesome as they already are, could be that much better next year. So, there's mixed feelings, but I think from a competitive standpoint, I no doubt helps make our league stronger.
No, I completely understand the situation. Last thing, and I want to go back to recruiting, because I was perusing your roster, and I noticed how international it is, especially Australia and New Zealand. Do you have some kind of connection over there? You've got, what, three from Australia and three from New Zealand?
You know, when I came into Portland, we had, a few players from Australia, and one of them ended up being the team leader and just an amazing just teammate and person to be around. And you know, I think a lot of times the connections that players have with other players, but more so I think the culture that we've created, I think that we got families that know other families that just feel really good about sending their kids to Portland because of, you know, how they're treated and you know, how we really try to care about their experience. It's just been a great pipeline of recruiting. And I think that, you know, it's something that we've been able to continue to do because of the experience they're able to share that they're having with one another.
Are you having fun coaching your daughter?
Yeah, it's been really cool to, you know, see her be a part of a couple championship teams. And, she obviously, I felt like had a really solid tournament both years that really helped, do some great things. And just like, being able to just sit back and watch the team celebrate that moment. It's just really fun to see her have that moment with her teammates. And, it's been a really great thing. And even more so than that, seeing her do so well in the classroom too is what I'm, you know, as proud about. You know, it's not, you know, we try to tell our kids, like, don't ever let basketball define who you are as a person. Right. And, it's all the other things that we feel like we try to provide as part of our program that in university that I feel so great that she's a part of.
You know, as you were describing, as you were saying, watching her celebrate with her teammates, it was like your coach, and then for a brief moment of time on the bench during all that, your dad, you're just dad for a few seconds.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and I would say that's exactly right. I mean, really try to keep those two things separate and just for a few seconds. And I think probably the time that those few seconds became more when my wife came over and said, "Hey, let's get a family picture." And at that point, you know, you're kind of, okay, this is, you know, it's awesome that our whole family gets to be a part of this celebration.
Coach, best of luck to you. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much for coming on with us. Just been fantastic. And we'll see you in the league next year. But good luck in the tournament this year. Best of luck
awesome.
The rest
good,
of the way.
Good luck to you guys, too. Take care.
Thanks.
Okay.
Michael Meek, what a nice man. I remember now interviewing him before. And it was for something else, but I remember that. And really, really cool guy.
Really cool, yeah. And you know, they'll have a gauntlet because they were on the outside looking into the tournament, mm-hmm. and then go take a run through and grab that automatic qualifier.
So what are they, 21-12? That's not a bad record.
Yeah.
But like you said, they lost, what, 3 straight, 4 straight coming in?
Mm-hmm.
But he said they turned it around and played 3 of their best games in a row. That's the way you want to finish. If you can finish strong, then it doesn't matter what's ahead. It doesn't matter what happened behind you.
Yeah, and he said it would be good if they could be here at Gill and see some – so just a better crowd,
yes,
more balanced crowd,
yeah,
than what would otherwise be.
Very cool stuff. Michael Meek, the head coach of the Portland Pilots, which will be a Beaver opponent at least twice next year. And I love. We'll take a break, but I love his candor on the answer about what did you think. He could have just said, "Oh, this is great." Well, no, I have mixed emotions about it because two really good programs, and Washington State women's basketball is very good, coming in now to cause them some more competition.
Everyone gets bumped down a rung.
Yeah, yeah. And with the Beavers, if everybody comes back, they don't have any seniors, and they reach heights, which they already have this year, but do even more, that would be a scary prospect for the West Coast Conference teams with Oregon State coming back.
Yes, it would.
All right, we'll be back and wrap up the program today. Get ready for Mike and the pregame show at 2 o'clock today for a 2:30 tip-off, Oregon State and UCLA in men's basketball tournament play. The winner to take on Oregon tomorrow, also at 2:30. Back after this on 1240 Joe Radio. Just, it's too bad that there has to be a negative way of talking about a guy that's so good. We were just talking off the air all about Travis Bezzana and Adley Rutschman and the numbers and statistic lines. I asked you what your favorite stat is, and you basically, on-base percentage, maybe OPS.
Yeah, OPS is probably, for publicly available college stats, is probably the best one you can use. It's a little, like, for big leagues, I've talked about it on the show before, like WRC Plus a lot. I think it's a very good offensive stat, takes everything you need to into account, but not as publicly available for college players. A lot of different factors. There's also talent discrepancies in college with different programs, opposition you're playing against, not a level playing field, a little bit harder to gauge. So you can go to a more mundane, simpler number like OPS to judge that. And by
okay,
OPS...
You don't have that in front of you right now, and I know you're more into Major League Baseball, but what would be the top 5 OPS average year in and year out in college baseball?
Like an OPS, like a OPS for a player?
Yeah.
It'd probably be about what Travis is doing right now. Like, so Travis Bezzana's OPS right now is 1,500, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible, right? Yeah. 15 nearing, about a little bit under 1,500. So 900, so like he's OPSing right now 1,488, which is pretty good.
That is number of times you get on base.
And your slugging.
And
yeah.
How many bases total you get.
Essentially, yeah.
So if you hit a home run, you get 4 bases. Your on-base percentage is 1,000, and your OPS is 4.
Right.
Or 400.
Right.
And if that's your first hit.
And I thought CVB, when he texted us before we had Michael Meek on from the University of Portland, really good conversation there. But he brings up a good point. about, he's like, I don't want to start like compare the value of catchers, pitchers, infielders, outfielders, et cetera. They all bring different value, which is correct.
Yeah.
And I don't want, the value of them is not measured by their batting average, which I think is correct. And when we were talking about Dave, first number that always comes to mind with college players is batting average, yeah, because it's the most available. It's the one they continue to show on the scoreboard for players and like that. Now, I don't think Mitch and their coaching staff takes a look at anyone's batting average on how they're going to determine whether or not the player's in the lineup or not. I don't think that's how they think about things.
How do you think they think?
So, I don't know exactly what they do. So, they're having availability today. That would be a good question to ask Mitch if I was there today and this conversation came up. But this is probably going to have to be for a later week. I would be curious, though. Here's something I learned. So, we had Aaron Goldsmith on last week, which is really cool. I had him on my podcast, which came out today with him.
You finally got him.
We talked about some stats. And you know what I learned? Do you know what the Mariner, what Scott Servais uses for his hitters when he's evaluating how effective a hitter is and what kind of matchups he wants to use? It's not batting average he uses, as would expected with the current age of big league baseball. He uses a stat called weighted on base average. Now, that might sound complicated, but it's essentially taking on-base percentage, which I say I like, and it's a valuable number, and effectively tells how often somebody just gets on base.
Yeah.
But what on weighted on base does is it differentiates single, double, triple, home run, and a walk. So every the more bases you get, the higher the weight is on that. So if you slug more, your weighted on base is higher than someone who has the same on-base percentage, but is like an Ichiro-level power bat. And
isn't that the same as OPS?
Smaller number usually because it's just on base.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slightly more complex version of that, but arrives at sort of the same conclusion, give or take. So it sort of cuts through the fact that when you add on base plus slugging percentage, OPS, that number still takes into account your on-base percentage, which does not differentiate your singles from your doubles from your home runs.
Yeah.
Your slugging percentage does, but that's only a portion of your OPS.
So, to what you said to me before the show about your guest, why am I drawing Aaron?
Goldie.
That he doesn't use those numbers while calling play-by-play, which I was just thinking, we are probably losing people right now. It's fascinating to me. We're probably losing people right now because we're delving into these numbers.
Right.
And I thought it was interesting that, just to kind of rein it back, that's what he said.
He brought up the point when we start talking about numbers like this, people are like, okay, time to listen to something else. Yeah. These guys are boring me.
Yeah, yeah.
Get back in the closet, nerd.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
right,
what he was essentially saying, which I thought was very interesting. And that's how I'd say like coaches probably also try not to overthink these things and go into too many numbers. But you can boil it down to the fact that Goldie told us, and what she says, I can have all these numbers down in front of me, but I want to be able to convey the message simpler. This player hits better versus righties than he does against lefties. He slugs more different righties versus lefties. Yeah. Instead of saying, well, I can look at his expected weighted on base per average against left-handed pitchers, and obviously way higher because he slugs a lot better. But no, you can draw a simpler conclusion from that, and I think that's what the coaches do as well. And when we evaluate Adley Rutschman and Travis Bazzana, I mean, we can look at the fact that Adley Rutschman in his final year at Oregon State only slugged 575, while Travis Bazzana this year, or sorry, that was his on-base percentage. He slugged 751, but Travis Bazzana this year is slugging 900. And you could say, even though the sample size is smaller, Travis Bazzana is hitting the ball a lot harder than Adley Rutschman was.
Exactly 1 minute left to the texter we haven't gotten to. How does Michael Conforto?
And it's an interesting. That's an interesting point, but Conforto was not the power hitter the other two were.
Okay,
I'll say that. Okay. Even like he was a decent power hitter in decent power hitter in the big leagues, but in terms of volume, not quite. Not from some of the stuff we've seen from Travis this year.
Well, I just know that watching Travis every time he comes up to bat, it reminds me a lot of Nick Madrigal in that. There's just such a smoothness to it that it make it look easy. Like, yeah, okay, no problem. And then boom, swing, here's a single.
And then you think of on top of that, there are things Bazzana does that Madrigal does not do as a baseball player in terms of hitting the ball hard and
a little
just
bit more
being
power.
A more complete baseball player, especially at the plate.
All right. Great show. Let's do it again tomorrow, and hopefully there'll be another basketball game tomorrow. 2 o'clock, Mike Parker comes on.